Blog Talk Radio.
All right, and welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I am your, I guess, more frequent host, Nate Lindberg, as Kelly is the night off again here tonight. So we've got an episode of NXT, which we are going to be talking about momentarily here. If you want to be part of the show, you can call in 515-605-9345. Hit 1, and you guys can talk. Let us know what you think about the show. And you could also call email if you don't want to call. You could, that is PWT. Sorry, every time, screws me up. PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. And we have a few of those emails. We got a few callers, so we'll get to those momentarily. First, let me introduce who we have with us tonight from the usual gang of idiots. We've got Mr. Tom Stout.
I say it every time if it makes you feel better. We've been doing that email address for
God,
almost 4 years now, and we still get it wrong every time. So don't worry about
every
it.
Every time.
I am at Tom Stout on Twitter, and I don't feel like I should be introduced first tonight because I am, and I know others are, and I know Kelly's very jealous that we finally got the other guy on. We've been trying to get him for a while, so why don't we pitch over to him?
Yeah, that's right. And for the first time on PWT Talks NXT, now that we are on Tuesdays, this could actually happen. We're going to welcome Mr. Cameron Hawkins. Thank you, Cam, for coming on, hanging out with us tonight.
I love this. You are the only person between you and Wade who actually calls me Cameron. I love this so much.
Hell yeah.
My mother calls me. My mother and women who hate me call me Cameron. So this is great. No, thank you guys for having me on. I really do appreciate it.
Not a problem. I can go with Cam. I can go with Cameron. I could do whatever you want.
No. Hey, talk to me how you talk to me. I'll work with it.
Sounds good, man. Sounds good. So let's first talk about the main event here tonight. Let me pull up my notes because that was Legado del Fantasma versus MSK. Man, it's been such a crazy night. I forgot what the main event was before we even started. Legado del Fantasma versus MSK for the NXT Tag Team Championship. That went about 18 minutes. My stopwatch, I kind of forgot to stop it right after the match ended. So it was about 18 minutes or so with MSK going over, which this I thought was a great main event personally. There was a little bit of back and forth here where I thought that we might actually even see MSK lose their titles right off kind of like right starting their reign here. But they did end up coming out on top. So I guess to start, why don't we go over to Cam? We'll talk about the main event, see what you thought.
One question I'll have, and I think we'll get into it. I wonder if the reaction for MSK – being a bit less than what it should be. I wonder if that has to do with Trey Miguel not coming over with them. Like, I do genuinely think about that. But the action is great. Legado del Fantasma. I understand that Pac and, you know, the Lucha Brothers are, like, the best in-ring trio. Like, I get that. But Legado del Fantasma, the way that they do their promos, the way they're serious about their business, they're my favorite trio right now. And then, you know, you get, you know, those two guys in there. They have a banger. Like, they're so good. MSK is so good. I really did appreciate this main event. I love that they opened with, and again, we're going to talk about it. They opened with what you thought was going to be the main event, but you had a banger at the end. It made the tag team more important. It made the trio more important. It made Bronson Reed more important and MSK more important. I loved it. It was great. The in-ring action is fantastic. I loved everything about it. I thought it was perfect.
Awesome. No, I can't disagree with anything you said there. I think putting this in the main event spot, because I didn't think this was going to be main event going into tonight. I thought it was going to be the triple threat myself. But this made, like you said, made the whole entire division seem much more important. And I think was the way to go. Let's go over to Tom. What do you think about the main event?
Yeah, the work definitely earned the spot after. Yeah, I don't know how many people went into this show expecting this even being a title match to be the main event, and they showed us with how the opener, what ended up being the opener, how that played out and how it got followed up on. They showed us why that opened, which unfortunately is a side effect of what we keep on talking about, how they're constantly building to way too many big shows, and now we're essentially on a two-week build to a takeover. I think the biggest strength here was that it really did feel like Legado del Fantasma had a chance to win. So the action felt like it meant more than it has in other recent main events with titles on the line. So it had that going for it. On the negative side, it does feel like we are heading into yet another takeover where we're looking at the tag title scene and going, like, I guess it'll be a triple threat or a fatal four-way. I don't know. And that feels like it's a problem, that that's a perpetual thing. Almost every single takeover, it's like, I guess just throw all four top teams in there? Sure. But, yeah, they got away with this one tonight for sure.
It helps if I unmute myself. No, I agree. I agree. I think, like I said, this I thought it was a great way to end the show. It was a very like energetic and action-packed show overall, and I think this was kind of a great way to cap off the energy that we saw throughout the night, which personally, spoiler alert, I did like. So yeah, let's go, I guess, over to the phone lines here and see what everybody else thought of the show tonight. Let's start with. It looks like it is a Skype or international call. So if you hear unmuted, and you're also going to be hearing my dog in the background because I think he's ready to start barking, go ahead, say hey, who you are, where you're calling from, and what you got.
Hey, guys, Hitton from London, Ontario. How y'all doing?
Hey, Hitton, how are we doing tonight, man?
Doing all right. Really good to have Adam Cole back, right? After what feels like forever. Yeah, this company, I got to say, they're tone deaf keeping this guy heel just completely, like even the minute fans that are there, we're all cheering for the guy. I'm happy to see him back, and I'm sure everyone's happy to see him back, but there was a lot wrong in the way he was presented when he came back. So I'm just going to go through some of the inconsistencies. Then I'm sure you guys will cover the positives. But, you know, at first I thought if it made any sense for Adam Cole to attack everyone in that triple threat match. And then, of course, I thought, okay, he wants to be the one to challenge for the title. So that's fine. He's attacking everyone. Cool. That being said, why did Johnny Gargano run into the chair shot after Cole was attacking people on the outside? Like, what sense did it make for a cowardly heel to do that? Come to the rescue of his babyface opponents. Like, he could have just easily sat back with a smile and kept an eye on Cole while he was finishing his business outside. I mean, Gargano could have just easily won them on his own. Why did the match stop, right? It's supposed to be no DQ. We saw more chair shots in the WrestleMania main event, the triple threat main event that the competitors survived, that 46-year-old Edge survived compared to in their prime young athletes, right? And these three, I thought, came up looking like complete wimps by the end of this. And then Adam Cole comes back, but why was he allowed by the security to remain in the ring all through a commercial break and all through Karrion Kross's entrance? And I don't quite understand why then William Regal, at the end when the takeover main event was finalized, why he was grinning and shrugging and he just let Adam Cole wreck the commentary desk. I'm happy to see Adam Cole back, but there was just a little too much in the way of logical inconsistency for me to fully embrace it. But over to you guys.
Yeah, I get to. Okay, so there's a few things there that I'm kind of okay with, and there's a few things there that I'm definitely not okay with. So, like for instance, the one thing that I'm fine with was kind of like Adam Cole just almost throwing that temper tantrum right at the end and whipping all the stuff up the announce desk and standing up on top of it and all that. Like, you know, I mean, I was okay with that. It kind of just, like I said, it seemed like a temper tantrum. Why it was allowed and whatever, you know, in a kayfabe sense, that's beyond me. But I was kind of okay with that. The thing that really bugged me is the fact that the match ended. It's a triple threat. It's a no DQ match. We didn't even really get anything that definitively said the match was over until Ember Moon pushed past Adam Cole. I forget if it was actually in Gorilla or if it was on the stage, but essentially as they were trying to get Adam Cole backstage, Ember Moon makes her way out to call out Raquel Gonzalez. I was going to say Mercedes Martinez, to call out Raquel Gonzalez. And that's kind of how we found out the match was over. They didn't actually say anything to signify it, which I thought was bizarre. Like you brought up, the WrestleMania main event, a lot of chair shots, that triple threat. We saw, you know, and yeah, I don't know. I don't understand myself why it was like this. Obviously, it was to, you know, build to the fatal five-way at TakeOver in Your House, but I feel like there's probably a better way of getting there. Cam, what'd you think about all of that with the triple threat?
So I said, again, fantastic triple threat. I was commenting on Pete Dunne. And I said, yo, Pete Dunne wrestles like his little brother told his mom one too many times. And that's all like the finger bending and those don't hurt. And then it hurts like hell, right? But really good match. You got three of the best in there between Dunne, O'Reilly, and Gargano. I think that Adam Cole, being a disruptor, attacking everybody, is grounds enough to stop the match. I'm okay with that. And also, if you've paid attention, I'm certainly not saying the caller hasn't, but just like if you've watched it, they've alluded to the fact that Adam Cole has got preferential treatment the whole time he's been in NXT. Like they've even said Adam Cole had a faction in NXT because he had preferential treatment. That's why he got Fish and O'Reilly and eventually Strong. Like that's a part of what he does. So Cole being this super talented, highly rated, highly decorated competitor and champion, but also being like the Triple H World Heavyweight title run, petulant baby. Those things both work together. So I'm okay with how they did it because Cole is so convinced because of all the things they've given him. And so Cole working his way into a match because Cross feels the need to prove to Cole that he's not as good as he thinks he is. I like that. I'm okay with that. I do agree it's a clunky way to get there, but like I'm good with how they worked it out only because they've always treated Cole like the biggest deal. Like that does count for me.
And Tom.
So I agree with Cam in that it's always felt like it's the next layer right under the surface that that Adam Cole is acknowledged by NXT management as being such a star that they kind of have to let him do what he wants, even when it pisses them off and ruins their plans. So from a character standpoint, I'm okay with how Cole went about things tonight as well. The weird thing, it's just going to be the rerun of me harping on how they've been stuck in the very short loop of Big Show, Big Show, Big Show, Big Show, and not enough time to build to him. Doing a fatal five-way just seems like a total lazy cop-out where they just looked at the time frame they had and the challengers that they had, which were just like unceremoniously inexplicably dumped out there at a very inopportune moment last week. Like, oh, by the way, here are three people that Balor has already wrestled. So you know that he's not going to win tonight, even though it didn't seem like he was going to win anyway, who will just for some reason wrestle next week for the title, which, you know, with one line of dialogue, Regal could have explained why he made that decision. But that's not what we got. However, as opposed to what's been the norm for me, forgetting what's been booked for the next week because it's hard to care about these days, I actually was very interested in this match because last week I picked Pete Dunne to win because of the 2 week build, and I just thought like, well, you don't really lose too much, when you book Pete Dunne, he's the package is already there. You don't need to do too much to get him to that point, so they can put him on a 2 week takeover build. And then over the course of the week, I started to lean Gargano. Just because even though I explained last week how I thought that they could get away with not having him on a takeover and he's got other stuff going on right now with the Way, or he could, it feels like the page is turning to the next chapter of the Way right now. It just feels like it's NXT that they're going to want to put Johnny Takeover on Takeover. And it feels like the goal with Cross right now is to prove the naysayers wrong and show with matches like Cross Balor 2 that he can have a good match while also seeming insurmountable. And who better, Pete Dunne and Kyle O'Reilly are great options as well, but who better to do that than Johnny Gargano out of everyone that they have on the roster? So that's really where I started leaning, and then they just do the no contest thing, and in what was already a no DQ match. So yeah, like Heaton said, sorry, Hitane, they go to commercial break and they come back and Cole's the only one in the ring, and later they show us these three guys all moaning at how hurt they are on the trainers' tables, which was not a good look for guys that you're just about to put back in top title matches. So I agree with a lot of what Hitane's saying, although I also, you can see why NXT is doing what they're doing here. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not all about this five-way thing. But Cole's side of it was all right.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you on a few of those things. Like, yeah, I mean, multi-man matches, I mean, as I've said a million times on the show, I'm not generally a giant fan of. I mean, even the triple threat match tonight, even though it was still a good match, I mean, there was still, you know, it was a good match barring the finish. But there were still quite a few moments in the match where, you know, somebody, you know, one of the members of the match is taking a nap outside the ring or whatever, and which is really kind of my biggest qualms about multi-man matches. But so yeah, I'm not a huge fan proponent. Wow, that's like Architept last week. Proponent of the Fatal Five Man, but at the same time, I do see where they're going too. I kind of wish they got there a little bit differently rather than this, you know, no contest finish tonight. The you did bring up a good point, Tom. I think you know, with it kind of showed everybody in the trainer's room, you know, whining and complaining about how hurt they were tonight. And then not only that, but then you've got undercard members coming out to kind of defend them in Austin Theory and Oney Lorcan. I guess it's not really a great look either to have the undercard guys defending the guys going into the main event scene, but it can also further the feud. I see where they're going with that as well. I just wasn't too high on that myself. So, Hitane, what else do you have for us tonight?
Yeah, just a little pushback. If the story is that Adam Cole is the star and I know security can't do anything, then why did security do something in one segment and then nothing in the other? Like, they could have, like, when Adam Cole came back, he could have just said, you know, yeah, well, they let me back in because I'm a star, just something to that effect. Just double down on it. And I know he sort of did that. He's like, hey, Regal, you me, but it was barely audible off mic. It was like transitioning to commercial. So, I mean, if that's the story, then emphasize on it. And I'm also curious about the five-man match now, because I think that right now, if Karrion Kross walks out of there victorious, it's going to leave a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. It's going to make these other guys look a little amateurish. And I don't know how you save it, because there's only one babyface in the match right now, and that's Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly versus four heels. And Kyle O'Reilly feels completely insignificant. And so if he takes the fall, he's, you know, demoted. If Adam Cole takes the fall, the most charismatic superstar in all of NXT will be taking the fall. If Johnny Gargano takes the fall, you know, he's 33, he just lost the North American title. And he'll be, you know, he'll also be pushed down a peg or two by taking that fall. If Pete Dunne takes the fall, I guess he could survive it. You know, he's the youngest of the bunch, but I mean, they've been building him up for some time now. I don't know if I would, you know, this is the problem with WWE, just sort of putting these people right in the main event and then they beat him and they have nowhere else to go. So what do you think is the best case scenario for getting out of this with Karrion Kross retaining and no one really being harmed in the process?
You know, that's a good question, you know, because I was thinking about this earlier myself. It's like, you know, with Kyle O'Reilly being the only face here, and he does kind of, I got to admit, he does seem kind of insignificant in this feud right now. So I don't want to see him take the pin here. I feel like Kyle O'Reilly's kind of been fighting uphill to become a main event player anyway. And this whole kind of cool guy Kyle thing that he's been doing the past few weeks, or about a month or two, however long it's been, you know, we've talked about it. It's kind of, I think, depending on how he continues it, it's either going to be hit or miss. I don't necessarily like, there's a lot of comparisons that I keep drawing to, like, Orange Cassidy with a lot of the way, you know, the ways he's kind of presenting himself, at least dressing and things like that, which, you know, I didn't like. I know Kelly was drawing some of the same comparisons. So I don't necessarily want to see him lose. So I think he's kind of fighting an uphill battle as it is. In my head, I'm kind of thinking it's going to be, if anybody is going to take the loss, I'm like, I'm thinking kind of Pete Dunne, because either Pete Dunne or Gargano. And I'm kind of thinking that because, like, Gargano, he could kind of roll it into his gimmick at the moment where he lost the title. He's kind of lost his, his way. Huh, he lost his way, you know, and he needs to kind of get that edge back. Right? Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm thinking there. Pete Dunne, I don't know why I'm thinking that, but it's like it sticks out as somebody that could take the loss. And I kind of even talked about this with Tom and Kelly a couple weeks ago where, you know, if he was to take another loss at TakeOver, you know, Pete Dunne could kind of, again, almost similar to what I was just saying with Gargano, you say he's lost his edge and kind of need to make a comeback as well. So that's kind of my thought there. Cam, what do you think about what Hitain came back with his rebuttal there?
Wait. Ask me that one more time. I'm dealing with the I'm setting up audio stuff right now. And on the Twitch,
hey,
I apologize.
No, not a problem. Not a problem. Actually, let me, we'll go over to Tom then real quick because I'm dealing with my dog too.
I think we all got it now. Your dog sounds fantastic, by the way.
Oh, he's great.
We're here now, I think, guys. Is every Twitch stream, are we good? Everybody's great? Yes, no, maybe?
Yep.
Okay, right, Jolie says we have it.
I guess I'll try to take dramatic pauses because my answer is quite brief. I believe that the best case scenario coming out of this is to have O'Reilly and Cole negate one of another to further their storyline and to have Gargano take the fall, because Gargano losing, not only, you know, in the career of Gargano, he loses all the time. It's kind of his thing. And right now, Gargano's storyline, I believe, is losing. That is the next chapter, that his wife now has the gold, and the gold that he cherished so much. Not only did he lose it, but he lost and was the one who got pinned in his next opportunity to obtain it. So I think now his hungry eyes are going to be looking in a different direction. Maybe that's not the way I wanted to put that, but you know, he was Candace sort of was eyeing his belt when he had it in a jealous way, like, oh, he cares more about that than he cares about me. And he exhibited that over and over again. So now shoes on the other foot.
You know, it doesn't count if you don't sing it.
Oh, man, I'm not going to go dirty dancing on you.
Hungry eyes. That's what I got.
Sorry,
my biggest thing,
I do that at home with my kids too. It's all right. That's one of our go-to.
Looking at that match, I thought you had three guys in there who, if I had to go with one, I would have said it was going to be O'Reilly. Again, based on what we had, O'Reilly's great. Dunn is great, but has come up short against Balor. Johnny Gargano has been back and forth between the main event and the mid card. And it's not even like the North American title is mid-card, because it's kind of above that, because NXT is smart enough to have these stories that branch and flow outside of that, right? But if anybody was going to take the loss, I thought it would be Gargano, but he doesn't need that. Like you said, not even like a jealousy, but right now, Candace and Indy are the focus. You know, so it wouldn't hurt him to be doing other things outside of that. So that didn't really, like, bother me, him not necessarily being in the main event. But if I went 1, 2, and 3, he was probably by 2, and Dunn was 3, as good as Dunn is. So, yeah. But now I'm like, Cross is going to win.
Right.
Who is he going to pin? I'd probably say Gargano. Like, probably Gargano. Because
I think that makes more sense.
Yeah, you have the Cole shot down the road where Cole can say, his gimmick is based off of, you didn't beat me. Like, that's a big part of Cole. O'Reilly is a top baby face that they're building up. And Gargano has, like, these machinations he can work with because he's in a stable, so he can do that. And then Dunn just being, like, nasty, mean, I'm going to get at you when I can, dude. It just makes sense that Gargano does it because he has, like, that resume to where he can take a loss and do enough things to come back and be that good. So, yeah.
For sure, for sure. Hitain, what do you think about them apples?
Yeah, I'm convinced that, all right, if we want to take Gargano on this losing streak, I think he is, because of his charisma, I think he's able to bounce back from that better than the others. I don't know if Kyle O'Reilly has any bouncing to do, quite, but like, that guy is just so, I have just completely lost interest in him. But I want to move to the what was that second match again? LA Knight versus Jake Atlas. Jake Atlas, I've actually seen some of his old stuff lately when he was prior to AEW, when he was a Jungle Boy, and my God, this guy's actually a really good wrestler. Like, he was even better than Jungle Boy before then. And to see how he's used in NXT right now, not to his full potential, I think he had the opportunity to go to AEW and he chose to go WWE, but today he had a good showcasing for himself. Usually his, but this match was actually, you know, part of the card, so I was happy to see that. It was a lengthy match, and he came off looking even better than he did in his one match with Cameron Grimes. And I'm not really convinced also that Cameron Grimes is a babyface right now. It seems like it's two heels vying for DiBiase's approval. So what do you guys think of this match, as well as just the evolution of the DiBiase storyline?
Sure. So we're talking about LA Knight versus Jake Atlas, which did show Jake, or did have Jake Atlas going over in 12 minutes and 37 seconds tonight. I got to agree with what you're saying here with Jake Atlas. He's somebody that, you know, I was not familiar with him before I saw him on NXT, but every time I see him, I'm incredibly impressed with him. He's always in some sort of a, he had actually a couple of stories that he was in a while back, shortly after, I think it was like the cruiserweight tournament about a year ago. He had a couple storylines going on, but then he was kind of off TV for a while. Whenever he was used, it was kind of in an enhancement role. We saw him come back, I think it was the last week or the week before, and in kind of an enhancement role, in this story, and it was against Cameron Grimes. It was 2 weeks ago against Cameron Grimes, and again, you know, here tonight. I thought he looked great. I was not expecting this match to go nearly as long as it did. I thought this was going to be a pretty easy match for LA Knight to come in and win, and kind of get that win over Atlas. But that was not the case. We had Ted DiBiase making his way down the ramp and get to kind of oversee the match to see who the next $1 million legacy holder will be, whether it be LA Knight or Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes did come out as well, and that kind of distracted LA Knight and did allow Atlas to pick up the victory, didn't it, Corbin? Yes, it did. Thank you. I appreciate it. Anyway, I figure I'll work him in somehow if he's going to be barking back there. All right, so before we go over to you guys, let me actually pull up an email here from our buddy Blake, from Blake and Style Show, Blake Riley. Hey, guys, a couple thoughts on this week's show. That was a great debut for Carmelo Hayes. What do you think his future is going to be? Two, this has got to be the most that William Regal's been on the show in over a year, especially in the ring. It's always great to see him in charge, and nobody touches him. They just do a lot of heavy glares. Three, seriously, a five-way main event? While it's going to be a great match, I think they're just trying to fill this card with something where it's the last takeover in the CWC, hopefully. I will say it's hard to boo Cole when I agree with everything he's got to say about Cross. And five, yay for Jake Atlas winning a match to start Pride Month. Finally, Vic Joseph made my night just as I was typing this when he said the Corey and Topanga was the greatest romance in history. I'm a huge Boy Meets World fan, and I used to host a Boy Meets World podcast, so I'm very biased. Blake from Milwaukee. I got to admit, I was not expecting to hear a Corey and Topanga reference tonight on NXT, so I was kind of happy to hear that myself. So we kind of talked a little bit about the five-way main event and about Cole and Cross, so we can kind of touch on the other stuff here. Cam, I'll put it in the Skype chat for you so you got that. But absolutely. While I do that, we'll go over to Tom to get his take on all of this stuff.
Blake, you having once hosted a Boy Meets World podcast does not surprise me about you at all. did Beth say Sam and Diane? I mean, the big one? Come on, I guess the big one is the one from, was it Moonlighting? But
did she say Sam and Diane from Cheers?
Maybe she did. She spat out a whole bunch of them. She did not say JD and Elliot, but you know what?
She should have, though. She should.
She didn't say Leslie and Ben. What are you going to do? Oh, boy, where do I start with this? Okay.
Dwight and Angela.
He mentioned the Adam Cole thing as well. And, yeah, I mean, you script your heel to say Cross is overrated and the guy's already really cool and the fans like him. That's not going to get booed. And we'll get to Carmelo for sure. But yes, on this, my one talking point that I always say about Jake Atlas to like pat myself on the back about, ooh, I saw him a little bit before he was in NXT, is that I always saw him as, on the indies, it's not an enhancement role per se, but he was always there to put over someone else and make them look good while getting some shine himself, and he excels at that. So I've never argued too much with the fact that he's in an enhancement position in NXT, but obviously he has a higher ceiling than that. I would agree that this whole bit did not feel like it needed to go three segments if we include LA Knight's intro. The match was two segments, which is already too long for what it felt like they wanted to do here. I didn't mind Ted DiBiase coming out. I felt like it was you just knew they were going to do it, but I still felt like it was too much to have Grimes come out again. Totally, as soon as you see who the guys in the ring are, it's like, okay, I know that a bunch of people are going to come out and it's going to be a distraction finish. But that's just because TakeOver's less than 2 weeks away and they got to get there, guys. So that's why, they do three segments in one, as has been their want. But on the, I don't know. This might get me a lot of heat. I don't know. I just, they
I'm
want
ready.
Okay, well, I'm going to say it. NXT wants the credit of giving Jake Atlas the win on June 1st, at the beginning of Pride Month. So that's the credit they want. But this is a guy, a wrestler who wants to put to the forefront his sexuality and be a representation, a positive representation. And NXT wants to take that credit by saying, oh, well, he was on the IG story talking about Pride Month, but they will not identify him as a gay man. So they are still, ever since he came in and he, they sat him in front of a painting of a rainbow and he said that he wanted to represent the different people or whatever it was that he said, they still will not take that step of actually saying what he's talking about and what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like they deserve that credit. And this is yet another meaningless win for Atlas because it's the exact same win that he got over Cameron Grimes, because his opponent was distracted. And is it really saying anything if this guy who is an enhancement guy gets a win because it was Pride Month and for no other reason, and then he's just going to go back to being an enhancement guy? So that's my pushback there. Maybe I'm the one who's missing something, but, for something that has meaning, this feels like a cheap way for NXT to try to get credit for that. On the other side of things, I feel like the real negative here, after cutting down a tree to stand on a stump for that last point, I feel like the real negative here is that now the guys who are actually wrestling at TakeOver as key parts of this storyline are both total losers. Yes, Cameron Grimes is the lovable loser, and LA Knight, I think, comes off as very suave and cool, but now they're both losers who can't keep their focus on a match. And they're like, I don't know. I just think that's a bad wrinkle in the story here. Last week's segment was strong enough, even though now 2 weeks in a row, Ted DiBiase has been flubbing his lines or forgetting his lines, but they get there in the end. Last week's segment was strong enough that it could justify the whole TakeOver build, but every single other piece of the build to this match has been a miss, I think.
I'm actually almost wondering if where we are going into this with two lovable losers, I didn't even think about that, like that they're both two lovable losers, or well, one lovable loser and then LA Knight, who you can't help but love anyway. But they're both kind of losers here. I'm almost wondering if at the end of the match, Million Dollar Man's going to be holding the Million Dollar Championship, be like, nah, neither one of you are worthy of this.
And hand it to Carmelo Hayes.
Yeah, or something like that, right? Or just keep it himself or something, like something completely, completely different than what we're expecting. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to see where that takes us. So,
take you back really quick.
Go ahead. Go for it.
LA Knight is killing it. Like, I really do think he's doing
his
thing.
Oh, God, yeah.
But he would have been the man in 1993. It just doesn't, like, as good as he's doing, like, it doesn't necessarily translate. Like, I think if you look at an old gimmick that's also presented as with new air, look at Ricky Starks in NWA Power.
Yeah.
Like, that was a throwback to an older, like, Ric Flair-esque gimmick, but it was presented in a way that was way more authentic and way more current. And that's why it worked for him to transition over into AEW. But I think that, like, LA Knight, like, it's good, but I'm just like, yo, like, there's nothing to spruce this gimmick up. Cameron Grimes is different because we never had a broke millionaire. Like, that's a different thing, right? But LA Knight fits way more into what he was doing in Power, but more like what Power was supposed to be, like what people remember about Power. You know what I mean? So they got to find a way to spruce that up a little bit. He's doing very well. I don't think it'll translate over like Bobby Roode. I think was a great NXT champion, but I think he was such a 90s or 80s champion that's why when they got to the main roster, it didn't do what it was supposed to do. So I'm afraid for LA Knight that like this thing you're doing, you're really good at it, but it doesn't mean like when you get in front of people who are like not diehard NXT fans, it's going to work. So, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of, I hear you coming from. It's like, I totally love what he's doing. I think it's great, but I definitely hear what you're saying, where it is kind of like an older gimmick. It certainly might not, or older style gimmick, rather. It certainly may not translate with, you know, some of the more mainstream, viewers. We'll see, you know, because I'm curious to see. And we've got another email that actually is going to be talking about return to touring and things for at least on SmackDown. I don't know about NXT, but it's going to be talking about returning to touring. And you know, I'm kind of wondering how he's going to be received in when there's actually a crowd, when there's more of a crowd. There is a bit of a crowd for NXT, but still, I'm assuming that there's still some piped in audio and crowd noise and things like that, and still, you know, as we've talked about, those fans are a little biased and stuff anyway. So so we'll see. Once we actually get back in front of an actual legit crowd again, we'll see what his reaction is going to be. Hitane, what else do you have for us tonight, or shall we move on?
Yeah, I just wanted to speak to what Tom Staub said about the about Jake Atlas and Pride Month. I mean, WWE is a corporation that's done a lot of tokenism, and very often, I don't think you should be worried about pushback necessarily, because, I mean, it's a valid concern. Tokenism generally isn't proper representation, and I heterosexual man can't really speak to whether they did right or wrong. I think it was just one comment made by Wade Barrett or somebody just gave a link that I don't even remember. So, I mean, that goes to show, like, they just said it and then they moved on. There wasn't really anything, you know, drawing attention to it. And I mean, personally, I wish they did a little more in terms of, you know, spotlighting what Jake Atlas may have done. But I also hope that this particular victory tonight doesn't just, you know, isn't just for Pride Month. And I hope he doesn't just go back to the parking lot. And that's where he makes his matches anymore. Again, it's a valid concern to bring up that, this could very well just be a token first day of Pride Month victory. And that would be really disappointing if that's the case. And I wouldn't put it past WWE. They have been, I mean, Stephanie McMahon herself, she said, you know, something like philanthropy or whatever, like that's the future of marketing. And
philanthropy is the future of marketing.
Yeah, like diversity is the future of marketing. And it's like, their initiatives are self-admittedly cynical. So, I mean, if we don't talk about it on this podcast, then who else will? So I'm glad you brought that up. But I don't have anything else to bring up, guys. That's discussion worthy. I'll let you move on to other callers.
Hey, yo, before you cut him off real quick,
Yeah.
The conversation that you have about how you feel about this, is this the place where you get that the most, genuinely?
Yeah, I mean, podcasts, you know, independent podcasts, you know, that are not corporately funded.
Oh, just in general. Okay.
That is where, especially in regards to your question. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Only because, like, it's not typically my space. I love being in this space, but me listening to you say this is typically where I get this amount of satisfaction, I'm like, okay, I need to tune in a bit more, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's, you know, and also black representation, that's a whole other conversation. As a person of color, sometimes I look at, like, Jinder Mahal, for example, who's Indian like me, and I'm like, the a lot of tokenism there as well. Like, he was champion, and then he just wasn't. And now, of course, he wasn't quite that talented. But, you know, they haven't done well by a lot of their Indian talents either. But that's a separate conversation. I just kind of wanted to, you know, commend Tom Stout for bringing that up. I think if there are queer listeners, they should be the ones to lead these conversations. But it's, you know, it's important to put that at the forefront.
100%.
I agree.
I appreciate you saying Jinder Mahal wasn't really any good, but on the back end, they do have guys who are like Mustafa Ali is so good.
Oh God, so good.
And it's just like, oh, randomly relegated. Like, and Ricochet is so talented, but is he good? That's a different question. Like, Ricochet as Prince Puma is really good. Ricochet as guy who we have to hear talk, not so good. But I hear what you're saying. There are absolutely men of brown descent, and not just men. Like, I'm sure there are women of brown descent, but in WWE, there are men of brown descent who are not getting maybe the push they should, even this late in the game. And if this is the show where you come to where you can talk about it, then great. I guess I have to be nicer to Tom Stoop. I don't like that, but I guess. Whatever, right?
Hey, we try. We try to be inclusive on this show.
Evidently, I hate effort. Effort creates losers. You're not a loser, Tom. You're great. But effort is that thing where, like, people who are bad at things are like, at least I'm trying. It's like, no, you still suck. But not you, Tom. You're fantastic.
I'll take it.
I'm only going to say that on this, never on Twitter, ever.
Immortalized in audio. All right, Hite, thank you for the call once again, man, and I'm sure we will be talking with you soon. All right, so we'll head over now to sorry, I think I cut you off as you were saying something, but I apologize. We'll talk with you again, I'm sure. And Corbin agrees. Corbin agrees. So we'll go over now to our buddy Darrell. Darrell, what's going on?
What's going on, you guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing very well, doing very well. What'd you think of the show, man?
Quite swell. It was an interesting show, and I hope I can throw some things to get y'all to think about with the question that I'm going to ask. And how are you doing today, Cameron? You know,
I want to talk to you more than one day a week. This is horrible. I hate this.
I hate you and your fam new sweater. So
I'm putting it on right now. I'm turning on the AC right now. Where's my family hoodie? I need it. Darrell, I miss you, and I love you, and I'm glad you're doing well, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I might offer a few more gifted subs so you can get you a Bethune-Cookman.
I appreciate it, man. I will. hey, if I get to 300, I will buy a Bethune-Cookman hoodie and wear that at least 3 weeks. I got you.
Okay. Got you. But, just to get this is something that you guys were talking about earlier. The reason why you didn't see security is they were telling the story that security was stretched thin right before Adam Cole came back out there. You forgot they had to escort Dakota Kai them out. They them was fighting back there in the training room. Arne Larkin and from the way. So they were trying to say like everybody was stretched thin. In a sense.
Yeah, Austin Theory came out to support, so for sure.
Yes. Right. Now to give y'all something that I want to see how does this change your way of thinking. Since they're doing this way with the fatal five-way for the main event scene, which I think they're doing it because that main event scene of those acts and characters, some of those guys are miscast. You like he didn't say, Adam Cole should be the babyface, who they should be building up down the line to take the title away from Karrion Kross. If not him, then maybe a Walter or somebody like that. And even though people, they keep trying with the cool Kyle O'Reilly, to me, it's not catching. He probably be more effective if he was a smug heel doing that in the fact. So, and, you know, they got Pete Dunne in limbo, and we all know about Johnny Gargano. He's good where he's at right now, but it's time for him to transition to something else. So with what they have going on, in the two matches that they have already announced for TakeOver, which is Xia Li, who I'm excited to see in a TakeOver match going against Mercedes Martinez, which I'm continually excited to see they continue to use her. And you have LA Knight versus Cameron Grimes. I'm thinking, depending on how they build out the rest of this card, and we might not see too many other tag matches. We might not get a tag team title match on that show, or maybe not even get a cruiserweight match on that show. I'm thinking they're building up this In Your House pay-per-view to start building up the bottom and middle of the card and future maybe potential top of the guys who might can break out and become top of the card main eventers, so they can reshape that main event scene, since you got so many guys who already solidified in the top. So it's kind of hard to change where you want them to go, like the Kyle O'Reillys and the Adam Coles and stuff like that, unless you tell a drastic story, a deep 6 months down storyline. So you use this in that Fatal 5-Way as a match just to attract some people, but to also build a story in some of these others who they're starting to focus in, like the Xia Li and Mercedes Martinez that they're trying to build a story with. With the Cameron Grimes and L.A. Knight, even though L.A. Knight just got into it, but they have been building the storyline between Cameron Grimes and Million Dollar Man for at least a few months now. So it depends on what else you have. If you have a hit row, get on the card and have them continue to build their storylines and something like that, and you can do a couple of other matches that put people to start building. What do you guys see about that and this as an interesting pay-per-view? Might not be one of the usual type of NXT type of pay-per-views, but something new, something different, because it's interesting because they're building the middle of the card, the bottom of the card, and maybe somebody who can break out from the middle and come into that top of the card, because you might probably get the Escobar versus Colossus. So, you know, what do you guys think about that? That's my first question.
Whoop, I think I muted myself there. What do we think about Escobar versus Bronson Reed?
No, just about my whole thing about me saying that this TakeOver overall is something to build the middle of the card, the bottom of the card, using all these different matches. If you go about the two matches that they already have announced, and we might not see too many other title matches except that main title match and maybe a Bronson Reed match, but that's still a building process of its own itself, because that's a long-going storyline that they have. And it seems like they might not be focusing on that main event title scene because all those guys are kind of misplaced. Even Karrion Kross seemed to be misplaced because he has no place, and they don't know what they want him to be.
Sure. So yeah, like let's go over to Tom to get all that, because I don't think Corbin's going to let me talk without interjecting himself.
It's an interesting point. Yeah, I admit that I missed the announcement of Mercedes and Xia being a takeover match, since it feels like a TV match. But a quick check of the Wikipedia page shows that, you know, somebody edited it to reflect that match, so I probably just missed that. I wouldn't be surprised if they just went ahead and threw that on the pre-show, sort of in an inverse of what they did with Zoe and Tony. I don't remember Zoe and Tony being announced ahead of time, but every time they referenced back to it after the fact, they called it a match that happened on TakeOver, even though you missed it if you didn't watch the pre-show. Regardless of that, everything else you lay out and the way that they've been building to things, even going into tonight and thinking that Legado del Fantasma had a pretty fair chance to win the tag titles here, it was in the back of my mind that maybe we, like you're saying, maybe we don't get a tag match on TakeOver, and that wouldn't be too abnormal. It's happened a number of times in recent TakeOvers, and with NXT now having six championships for their two-hour TV show, something's always going to get left off unless they do another two-night thing. Like, was that the most recent one that they did? Whatever. I think one of the more notable things that happened in the main event tonight was the attempted run-in by Grizzled Young Veterans that was interrupted by Ciampa and Thatcher, just as the acknowledgement of, like, oh, yeah, these guys are champing at the bit, too. So that was the one.
And that's
that
another TakeOver
like,
match,
okay,
too, Tom. Grizzled Young Veterans versus them. That's another TakeOver match.
Yeah, if they can get there in one more episode of television, that's the question.
All right, Cam, what do you think?
I'm with a lot of that. Like, I think that Ember with the Grudge match, I think is dope. Fatal Five Way, I think is dope. I do think they're going to do number one contenders match for the tag team titles. I think you get another GYV and Thatcher and Ciampa match, and you give the tag title the week off. I don't think you go triple threat right away, but that would be like the most action. I don't think you do that. I think you can build a card off like those three matches. You can do a Jake Atlas, Cameron Grimes, LA Knight triple threat. I would love for Jake Atlas to win and him be the $1 million man, just because like, L.A. Knight doesn't need it. Cameron Grimes doesn't need it. That would be cool for Jake Atlas to be all of a sudden be that guy. Like, I'm kind of with that. Like, okay, let's go that way. But I think that it being a week from Sunday, like, you have some strong stuff sitting right there. And really, whatever else you put on the card, that Fatal 5-Way, that's heavy enough. I do think so. So, you know the action is going to be good because it's an NXT card. So, yeah, you can kind of go from there.
How much of that did you guys catch? Joe
got all
the last minute. Okay.
No, we got most of it. We got all.
Sorry, Twitch. What I was saying was the main event was very strong, in that the Fatal 5-Way will work on Sunday. I think that Ember Moon, a grudge match, you know you're going to get that good action. It's her and Dakota Kai will be strong. And then if you get a triple threat between Grimes, LA Knight, and Jake Atlas. Jake Atlas winning would be really interesting, and I think would work. I think, like,
yeah,
having a wild card for $1 million man, because really, like, it did nothing for Steve Austin, right? It did nothing for Virgil. But it's not like it propelled anybody else to, like, be a thing. So why not strap it on a guy and make that the focal point? But Cameron Grimes is one of the best wrestlers in the entire world. He just is. He's that good. LA Knight, even though, again, I think his gimmick is like 20 years out of date, it's not like he's not good at it. You know what I mean? Like, throwbacks are still good. So put it on a guy like Jake Atlas, who doesn't necessarily fit the mold but can benefit from it. I think that's fine. And the card is so strong at the very, very, very tip top with the Fatal 5-Way, whatever else you do, it's fine. It's just fine.
I think I agree with most of that. I got to admit that this entire time I've been trying to wrestle my dog, he just wants to bark and bark and bark. So I didn't kind of catch most of that, but I think with most of it, I do agree, at least with what I did catch. Darrell, what else do you have for us tonight?
Oh, okay. And yeah, that's what I was hoping. Now, to talk about that Kushida match, if this is what they're going to do to start building up Kushida run, because last week Regal started this by letting us know that this was coming up by saying that he's going to call for more cruiserweight competitors to come in. And another way, that's why I think he won't be on TakeOver, because it looked like week by week they're going to be doing the open challenge and have him bring in someone new. And I like the match that they had today. And, you know, I like the profile that they gave him before the match. It made him seem like somebody, made him seem important. And when he came in, he carried that bravado along with himself to show that he's somebody. And the match made it more interesting. Even though he lost, you want to see, okay, what's up with him? And that's something, you know, just like Zoe Starks when she first came in and she lost a couple of big ones, you got invested in her. And I guess this is their new style. And I want to see how this helped build people who they come in, and also how this helped Kushida. Do you think this can help him? And who will be – do y'all want to continue to see new people every week that he faced?
So I got to admit, I really like this. You're talking the open challenge. I definitely like the open challenge. Any open challenge I do appreciate. But I really enjoyed this match tonight with this is Kushida versus newcomer Carmelo Hayes, who I believe Wade Barrett said what his name was before.
I said Christian Casanova from the
Christian
jump. Sure.
I knew it was Christian something. I knew it was Christian something. Christian Casanova. Thank you. So Christian used to wrestle as Christian Casanova. So this was the Cruiserweight Open Challenge match for tonight, which went about 10 minutes and 55 seconds, which again, a lot longer than I expected this match to actually go. But man, I have really got to admit, I really liked what I saw out of Carmelo Hayes. There were a few spots in the match where, like, in the recap that I picked up for Kelly tonight, I ended up calling a couple of these moves just like unique face busters or unique springboard bulldog, because I didn't really know what else to call them. I couldn't tell if they were like botched spots, but at the same time, they looked so fluid. They didn't look botched. They just looked like unique offense. I really liked what he brought to the table. The fact that he went so long with Kushida really kind of says something to me. Not only did he go with, you know, so long with Kushida, but in a decent match, a really good match. So yeah, I like this. I think it, I personally think anytime you do an open challenge, even going back to like John Cena's US Open Challenge, I think it raises stock in the title. It raises stock in the champion. You know, it makes it just feel like you're a fighting champion. You're not somebody that, you know, a heel that's just trying to hold on to their title, but thwart off any chance at a match or anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, personally, I really like this. Let's go over to Cam. What do you think of Kushida and Carmelo Hayes?
Great intro match. Like, of course, nothing's ever on the level of John Cena, Kurt Angle. Like that's the standard, right? From
it was so
I'm
good.
Here from the jump. This is wild, but no, Kushida gave him a lot of space to be great. He kicked out of stuff. He worked out of stuff. He shook off stuff, which is also a big thing. Like shaking off a move, be like, nah, that don't hurt. Like that's a big thing, right? But we all saw Christian Casanova as a big signing. In that class, he was the biggest guy. The biggest thing for me, and not everybody in the chat might understand this, or everybody listening might listen to this, but indie wrestlers were like, yo, they signed Christian Casanova. He's that guy. Like he's been touted as that. So for them to wait to debut him against Kushida in a title match as somebody who's stepping up is a big deal. It means they know their formula for what's worked with guys, even if he's not winning the match. And them shaking hands at the end, it's all huge. So he's a big cruiserweight. And when I say that, like Eddie Guerrero, big cruiserweight. Chris Jericho, big cruiserweight. Even size being a bit different, but Alex Wright, big cruiserweight. Like guys who can do things outside of that specific division. And so I think it boded well for him, like competing as well as he did, getting the handshake afterwards, getting the shake off and stuff. So I really appreciate it. I thought it was great. And it means more for him. Like he's going to have a good singles run, and they value him in a different way than they value a lot of guys. So I like it.
All right, and Tom.
All right, I think I have the class right here. I think I do. Anyway, I'm glad that Cam knew who this guy was, and I'm glad you went first. Looking at the class that I think he came in with, when that was announced, I was looking at Priscilla Kelly and Parker Boudreau as the big ones, and that's partially because I didn't know who this guy was. So I thought it was also a little – I'm 50-50 on Wade Barrett saying you may be familiar with him under this name, but now he's going by this name, because it's a little bit like, we know, you know, these are just characters and they're changing their name when they come to us. But at the same time, they've done that with bigger names like Hideo Itami definitely did it. I think Asuka did it too. At least like her ring side at TakeOver, I think she was announced as Kana.
She was.
But those were much, much bigger names than my perception of Carmelo Hayes is, but maybe I'm the one who's just missing something. So the weird thing here was that they announced it as an open challenge and then they didn't present it like an open challenge. But the benefit was that they were then able to very easily excuse the hype package that they gave for him. And then the match, I mean, Cam said it, this was a great introduction to him. It's one of those good NXT debuts, I guess good debuts in general, where you notice this guy and you have specific things. Wade Barrett, again, he said it himself. This guy's movement is incredible. I was paraphrasing. I think that's what he said. I'm like, yep, that's what I'm noticing, the way he moves around, and that it's measured enough by today's standards, because the recent cruiserweights that we've seen, they either don't look physically impressive or they feel like they're trying way too hard to just do a bunch of flippy stuff in the ring, and none of it really coheres. This was a cohesive match where the two worked really well together, and Carmelo looked good in his first match enough that I'm sitting here going like, okay, I want to see that guy on TV again. So
Tom, I love you. I would never, I'm interrupting you because I love you, not because I would ever actually be mean to you. But one thing Barrett said, anyway, he was like, yo, Carmelo in the ring, knowing he belongs to Kushida, is how I felt when I was in the ring with John Cena and Randy Orton and knowing I belonged. I thought that was so important. Like, that was a big deal.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't pick up on that one. Yeah.
I did pick up on that, but I didn't think about that till you brought it up. But that was a really good call by Barrett, by far.
Yeah, I hope that Kushida continues to do these, and to answer Darrell's question, I would hope that these would be kind of in the mold of, I mean, John Cena's U.S. Open Challenge. Yes, there were some NXT guys coming up through that, most notably Kevin Owens, of course, but. I would want this to be more like Cody Rhodes' TNT Open Challenge, where we're getting glimpses at people that maybe aren't even under contract. That would be really cool.
I could be down with something like that. Get glimpses of people that aren't necessarily even signed or, in the undercard or something along those lines, for sure. Darrell, what else do we have? We do have one other caller on the line tonight, but if you got one other thing, we get it in quick.
Oh no, that was it for me. Like I said, I was just trying to make sure and see how y'all felt about this interesting theme that I was seeing and how they looking like, how they build and everything. And hopefully, I do get my number one contenders match, since last week Tommaso Ciampa them said that their paths going to cross, but it only across at TakeOver. And then the promo that they gave Grizzly Young Veterans after that show, they also said, well, we'll meet you at TakeOver and respond back to them and say, but we
need
they,
it.
They said, yeah, we weren't going to meet you. So, you know, we weren't going to meet you. We worried about the champions, and we're watching that who's going to win next week. So hopefully we get that, and then that fill out that card. And then usually they have, six matches? So we only have one more match to go, and maybe that's the title match. And I think, just to leave y'all with this, how can Ember Moon help elevate Raquel Gonzalez in that match, since Ember Moon, she is explosive, and I still always remember that match that she had with Asuka when she first challenged for the title. So I would love to see how that match would go and how that could be a proving ground for Raquel Gonzalez, somebody who they pushing to the top but need to prove that she belongs at the top. So that's it for me. I was just leaving y'all with that little teaser.
All right. Thank you very much, Darrell. So before we I guess we go over to the next call, why don't we touch on the segment where Ember Moon basically pushed through, like we said earlier, pushed through Adam Cole, getting escorted out of the arena after the Triple Threat opening match. And she called out Raquel Gonzalez. Raquel Gonzalez started to storm the ring and was kind of thwarted off by security. And then Dakota Kai ended up attacking her from behind, leading into a match made for next week between Ember Moon, Dakota Kai. And it looks like she might be calling out Raquel Gonzalez for the NXT title, potentially a takeover. If that is the case, kind of going to Darrell's question, I'm hoping we see that Ember Moon that faced Asuka, and it's this version, that version of Ember Moon. Not that I'm like, you know, this is something we've been talking about for a while now on the show, but Shotzi and Ember together, I did not like. I didn't like them. You know, their in-ring style, whatever, was okay, fine, but you know, they just seemed so annoying as faces. They were coming off, you know, as heels, very heelish when they were trying to be faces, and I just didn't really like it. So I feel like Ember's kind of been defined down a little bit because of this tag team with Shotzi. One of the things that Kelly brought up as kind of as a plus side to that tag team is once they both break off and become singles again, they're going to feel important. And I'm hoping that that is what happens here with Ember, because man, ever since she's come back, I feel like she, you know, we even talked as soon as she came back to NXT, we thought she was, you know, we're going to see her name as a two-time NXT Women's Champion. Mm-hmm. I think that's still definitely possible. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be this time where Raquel's, you know, so her run's so infantile here, but I still think it's potential for that to happen. If we get that kind of if we get that version of Ember that we saw against Asuka, same version of Ember we saw, you know, kind of on the main roster, and not this schoolgirl bully version of Ember Moon that we've gotten with Shotzi, I think that she's definitely going to help play into the women's championship scene, elevate Raquel, and you know, and all of that. I think she definitely has the potential to do it if booked right. Let's go over to you guys and see what you think on that before we go over to the we'll think of what Darrell was saying as well as the segment before we go back to the phone lines. We'll start this time with Tom.
Do you mind if I throw in JB's email on the subject?
JB, I didn't even know JB sent in an email. Go ahead.
It was after we started, so I don't blame you.
Yes.
It's just a quickie. JB says, hi, team. JB from Detroit. I thought the crossover between Cole and Ember Moon after the Triple Threat was kind of weird and out of place. I'm not really sure what benefit that interaction added to either story. Also, why are we having this takeover at all? All these matches seem rushed within a few weeks, and I'm not sure to what end. Love the show, and go VIP. Thanks, JB. You know I agree with the second point there. I thought the Ember storming out, there wasn't so much an interaction as just her storming out, and they hadn't established yet that the participants in the match had been carted to the back. So it was very strange. It's like, wait, is she going to go out there and try to pick a fight with Pete Dunne or something? Oh, he's not out there. So
that's what I was thinking.
And, you know, they throughout the whole night, they kept on trying to say, like, oh, it's chaos here on NXT. So, you know, they wanted to get that vibe. So, you know, but that little element didn't work. I thought it was, you know, it's a weekly wrestling TV show. You're going to get this where Ember comes out and she's just a house of fire, all upset and ready to derail the show because of something that happened last week, as if she hasn't had a chance to try to go pick a fight with Raquel Gonzalez off TV. So there's that. And then later when she was interviewed by Mackenzie Mitchell, she said, Raquel Gonzalez is one of the most dominant champions in NXT history. I'm like, okay, calm down.
It's been a couple weeks.
Right? But, you know, Ember, I do think that Ember has potential to be back at the top in NXT at some point, if that's what they want to do with her. And I do miss the just returned from injury, mama's home, Ember Moon. But you're right, Nate, that she does feel lesser now because of how poorly the tag team with Shotzi went. Hopefully it's actually over. But, you know, like Darrell is suggesting, her job here is to put over Raquel. And so I would just suggest that in the many times that they've worked on TV so far and probably practiced together off screen, hopefully they've worked out some spots that really put over Raquel as a monster, in this case, unique to Ember's offense. So I think it's just as simple as that. Just put over Raquel strong, let her kick out of some big stuff, that kind of thing. Ember is not at a point right now where you're losing too much by having Raquel go over her pretty definitively.
For sure. All right. So, let's go back to the phone lines here. Let's go and talk with 410. Go ahead, state your name. Where are you calling from?
How you guys doing? This is Reverend Keith in Baltimore.
Hey, Baltimore. Hey. Maryland in the building, baby. What's good?
What's going on,
How
Keith?
You doing?
How we doing, man?
Fine. Doing well. It's good to hear your voice, Cam. And
hey, always,
and,
baby.
And Nate, always. Listen,
always,
I'm going to be brief and to the point, and I echo what was just said about the former Christian Casanova. He is definitely a star. He has it. He has the look. He has the charisma, the athleticism. And as you saw tonight, guys, he can go in the ring. I mean, he has put on phenomenal performances against the likes of Chris Bay, Casey Navarro, Myron Reed, and many others. And,
three young
superstars, you know,
by the way. We should acknowledge that. Three young superstars who can do all of the wrestling. Absolutely.
Excellent.
Yes. So he's definitely going to be a game changer. And I knew that he was about to debut because he changed his Twitter handle within the past 2 days from, you know, his former name to Carmelo Hayes. So we knew it was just a matter of time before he would be debuting, because I had noticed that they had just trademarked that name, you know, WWE, that is. So it was good to see him tonight, and I think that he's definitely going to be a star. And as you guys were just alluding to, Ember Moon's job is to put Raquel Gonzalez over. I think it'll be a good match, you know, but it's good that they finally broke off the tag team of Ember and Shotzi, because you need them as prime players in your women's heavyweight title division, you know, while some of the younger talent, you know, gets groomed, and especially when they go back to the live events or what have you with NXT, some of the younger stars like Zoe Stark, Zeta Ramirez, they can gain their reps. But in the meantime,
throw off your train of thought real quick, but I want to agree with you. Ember and Shotzi are the two you cannot relegate. Like, they can lose, but they got to lose in a way that they're strong. Like, absolutely. Like, those are the two in that division. And, of course, you have Indy, you have Candice, who are tag team champions, but people who don't have belts, who cannot be defined down, Ember, Shotzi. Absolutely. I'm right there with you.
Thank you. And that's all I have for tonight, guys. You guys do a wonderful job, as always, and go VIP. Thanks for taking my call. Talk to you soon.
Great to hear from you, Keith.
Yes, as always, Keith. Ken, did you have anything else that you wanted to touch on with everything he brought up?
No, that was it. You know, it was an exciting show. You know, once again, I do feel that some of these matches are being rushed just for the June 13th event. But, hey, you know, I'm never going to shy away from watching the takeover, so I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely. All right, Keith, thank you very much, man, and we will talk with you next time. So, Tom, why don't we go over to you to get your thoughts on what Keith's talking about.
No, I agree. I actually – nothing further, Your Honor.
Cool. And that's pretty much where I'm at too. So that's kind of why I was throwing over to you guys. But yeah, perfect. I'm in complete agreement myself. All right. So let's go ahead. We'll go and talk about a couple things we haven't talked about yet tonight. Let's go ahead and talk about Zeta Ramirez and Zoe Stark versus Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. Before we do that, we'll also talk about Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell getting interviewed backstage to talk about their match tonight. They were also talking a little bit about Candice LeRae actually was talking a little bit about her husband's match with Karrion Kross in a Fatal 5-Way coming into TakeOver. Indy Hartwell was listening to headphones that was playing some 80s power ballads. I didn't quite catch what song it was, but at least that's what Beth Phoenix said. It was an 80s power ballad. And a little bit later on after that, Dexter Lumis found those headphones backstage, picked them up, and shed a single tear. So let's kind of talk a little bit about Zeta Ramirez, Zoe Stark, LeRae, and Hartwell. That match went, let me pull up my notes here, that match went 3 minutes and 45 seconds, and it was the shortest match of the night. So I think it was, I was very surprised here that Zoe Stark spent as little time in the ring as she did, especially considering how heavily she was pushed to kind of start her NXT career here. Zeta Ramirez was really in the ring for the majority of the match for her team. And I mean, she's a bump machine. She made the way look great here. I really like Ramirez and what she's bringing to the table. I really want to see some more out of her. And I want to see some wins out of her. Let's go to Tom first on this as well, and we'll see what you thought about Zeta Ramirez, Zoe Stark, LeRae Hartwell, and all of those backstage segments that go along with it.
On top of all of her other lovable characteristics, Indy Hartwell has great taste in music. To my great shame on the subject of 80s power ballads, I did not recognize the song that was playing, and I was just scouring Twitter to try to cheat and see if somebody else noticed it, and I didn't see anybody pick up on it.
I'm almost wondering if it was a fake power ballad for like copyright issues or something.
Yeah.
Always possible. They got Tony Khan money, but they're not spending it though.
So I do not need Zoe Stark in a tag team jobber position, even if it is potentially a one-off and even if she is not taking the pin. And Zeta Ramirez too. I mean, I guess I won't get too upset about this one because she was presented as a jobber who has managed to eke out some wins. So even taking the loss here is probably more of a gain for her on TV than it is a detraction. But it's just like there's more potential here than to just give them just to be the ones that Candice and Indy are going over, seemingly just to give the tag team champions a win to make it. To provide the illusion that, yes, your champions are wrestling. They're not just sitting in the back dealing with this romantic subplot. Because there wasn't any furthering of that storyline in front of the crowd. All of that was kept backstage, which, fine. It's just they were signaling us to look for it, and it wasn't there. Kind of like last week when they were signaling to us to look for dissension between Kai and Gonzalez. And it just wasn't there for the entire match.
All right, Cam.
No, right there with you. I think that it was a too quick of a match for somebody who you've been bigging up, especially with her stuff with Tony Stark. Or not Tony Stark, with her stuff with Tony Storm, I'm sorry. She's kind of a big deal as far as how you've presented her. And to relegate her to a tag team match... in a short match, I don't think that does her a big service, right? But
yeah.
I understand, like, Indy's a big deal right now. And she's been smashing it. I got to admit that. Her, Candice, like, they've been killing it. Candice walking into the Lion's Den, all of a sudden, like, taking a cheap shot on Indy and Shotzi. Shotzi and Ember out of nowhere. Like, for no reason other than to be a dick. Like, I love that. And her getting beat up for it. That's great. So they've been on that. But, like, yeah, I don't know what it's really building to, but that's going to be a good match when they end up having it. It really is. But
oh, definitely.
Indy's been a star the last few weeks. Okay, we got to say it, right, because we can say it. Just looking to the camera. We can say it. Indy... listening to 80s power ballads because the person she's interested in is like 15 years older than her. Okay, I guess, whatever, that's fine. But yeah, there's something that's listed there. But no, she's been killing it. He's been into it. The miscommunication because the way he wants to have their way. That's been really good. I can't deny any of that. This is all kind of fun to watch, and I'm genuinely curious to see how it plays out between Indy and Dexter. Oh, gross. I need a girlfriend. I'm going to make it happen.
you and me both. You and me both. Anyway, single life during the summer. So, I can't really disagree with anything there. Indy has been killing it. I've really enjoyed what she's been doing with this whole index angle here. It's because, like, when she first joined the way, I mean, I wasn't, like, I don't want to say I was super high on her, but, like, she was definitely the Marty Jannetty of the stable, you know, if I guess the Rockers were a stable. But whatever. But she's really come a long way, and I've definitely been digging everything she's been doing. It is a little bit of a weird angle. It's a very weird angle, but it's almost kind of won me over. Like, I hated it, and now I'm kind of, like, really wondering what is definitely going to be, you know, what is going to be happening here with these guys. So, all right, let's go over to I'm a little bit discombobulated today, but I guess when am I not? Let's go over to an email from Kevin Catani, because why not? I have it open. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. First, I want to wish my Olivia a happy third birthday. Well, Olivia, happy birthday. So I feel like I ask this question every year or so, but now that NXT is no longer going head-to-head with AEW and NXT is a few weeks into their new format, what's one thing that you'd like to see them do to reestablish themselves as the brand we all came to know and love? Thanks for your thoughts, and go VIP. Office hours are now over. Professor Kevin P. Catani, PhD. So this kind of breaks from we're talking about the format of the show, or talking about all the matches and everything in the show, which is fine at the moment. I think if you know, with them not going head-to-head anymore, I would kind of like to see them, and this is something we've talked about, I just want to see them slow the pace down a little bit. Yeah, we got this really frenetic, chaotic show tonight, which I think still worked and it was okay. But, you know, the first couple of weeks we saw them go back to Tuesday, the pace slowed down just a hair, and I felt like they were a little bit more cohesive and coherent shows. That's really what I would like to see. I just want to see them slow down, take their time telling stories, and not kind of like jump around like they've been doing the past past year or so. I know a lot of that probably had to do with COVID and things like that, but but there was a lot of jumping around and things like that throughout the course of the past year. So on Kevin's email, Cam.
Yeah, my biggest thing, like to say, but like get out of the CWC. Like, you can't really control that, right? But what Kyle O'Reilly's been doing has been so good, and a live crowd should see that. What The Way has been doing, what Ember and Shotzi have been doing, the crowd should see that. Legado del Fantasma, like, I need those boos. Like, I need people to not like them. And, like, I need a genuine reaction to MSK. Like, it's nothing you can control, but NXT getting in front of a live crowd, to me, because I know how I feel about the main roster. That's the most important thing to me. I need to know how people feel about them, because, like, I feel like they're bringing in not plants, but, like, it's weird that the crowd doesn't love MSK, because they're like, this is what you want, or this is what I thought you wanted, you know? I think that Santos Escobar is smashing it. I want to know what that feels like. I know what Adam Cole is. I know what I know what Karrion Kross is going to be. I feel like I know what Kyle O'Reilly is going to be, but everybody's under them. Like, Shotzi and Ember, I want to hear that. Raquel Gonzalez, I really, really want to hear that reaction, because I was too young to know what Shawn Michaels and Diesel felt like, and that's what they're pushing for. I want to know what that feels like. So nothing that nothing that the roster can do, but live audience reaction, and then reacting from there. That's what I want to hear. That's the biggest thing they can do. Get in front of people, let people react to what they do, and then adjust from there. That's for me.
I can't disagree with any of that either. Tom?
Yeah, my main answer was just the same as yours, Nate. Slow the heck down. But I'm really glad you said what you said, Cam, because, I guess I've gotten to a point now where I don't mind just stating it flatly that the people they are bringing in are the NXT drones. You know, they are the people who want to be there anyway, that are going to give them the reactions that they want. Or, you know, there's the rare anomaly, like in the case of MSK. But, you know, I mean, I got an invite to be there toward the beginning, and I didn't go, and then they took me off the list. Now I'm back on the list. For the past 3 or 4 weeks, I've been getting an invite every time, but that's because they've opened up more rows, so they're really looking to fill the space.
I thought I saw a third row there tonight, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, but they were really selective, and like when I said no, they were like, okay, that guy doesn't want to be here enough. Let's not invite him again until we want space. And so, you know, you get the same, you know, if you look, you got to look through the plexiglass and the chain link and the mask, but you see the same people that have always been there going back years and years.
100%.
And on top of that, you can't even really, except in the case of, I mean, we got the Adam Cole chance tonight. If I'm being honest, I probably wouldn't even be clocking the MSK reactions if it wasn't for Kelly always bringing them up on the podcast, because all I really hear are the fake reactions that they pipe in. So to that extent, I definitely agree. And just the aesthetic of it, I'm so sick of looking at the CWC, and that's not because of how it looks. It's because I have come to associate that and the way the show looks with so much of a downturn in the quality week to week of what NXT is putting forth, and in what I feel are repeated irresponsible decisions regarding the pandemic. And so when I look at the CWC, I'm reminded of all of that. So if they get out of there, that might help that perception. Even if I'm not actively thinking of it, I see the CWC and it's somewhere in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's a damn good point. I mean, you know, whether it's the CWC or the screens, you know, in the CWC or in the Thunderdome or anything like that, it does. It's a stark reminder of not just the times, but you know, like you said, in NXT, just it's this whole past year has just been a bit of a downward decline for our beloved brand. All right, let's go over now to, I guess we have one more match to talk about. Actually, no, we don't. We already talked about that, the main event. That's why I haven't crossed that off my list, because that's the first thing we talked about. All right, so there's a couple segments that we haven't talked about. We'll go through a few of them quick here. Corbin, we'll get to you. So we have Legado del Fantasma in a promo segment, basically just hyping up their match for later on tonight. Don't know if there's really a whole heck of a lot to talk about there. We had Drake Maverick showing up at the arena, Hit Row coming out of a van and kind of coming up to Drake Maverick, making fun of him a little bit, calling him a little man and a clown and things like that. Drake Maverick started laughing at the fact that he was called a clown, and Killian Dane stepped in to kind of make sure his little buddy didn't get, well, obliterated. We also had the Tien Sha and Xia Li calling out Martinez a takeover, which we talked a little bit about with Darrell, but I don't know if we really got into that. And we also had Frankie Monet talking about her debut and how, you know, basically just reading a whole bunch of reviews off of the internet from probably websites like ours, maybe, who knows. But reading a bunch of reviews of her debut match last week. And we also had Mercedes Martinez responding to that Xia Li call out where she will take her on at TakeOver. One of the things she actually said, which I thought was cool with the Mercedes and Xia Li things, they kept kind of talking about how they fought each other during the Mae Young Classic. And one of the lines that Mercedes brought out here, which I thought was great, was, "I beat you at the Mae Young Classic. At TakeOver, I run through you." And I wrote that down specifically because that was great. Tom, let's go over to you and talk about these few segments before we go to emails.
Let's see what I got. The Legado del Fantasma promo to hype up the main event. They've been doing this to hype up these title main events, and it's good on the night to make the main event feel more important. This one was the best one yet because these guys just nailed it, and this was the starting point of me feeling like they had a chance to win, and they definitely outcased later response to them. Drake Maverick in the parking lot with Hit Row. This was a really weird confluence of people all in the same space. But once it narrowed down to the people you know are going to be in a match with one another, it was like, okay, you know, they're adding a little bit of something behind what's going to be Hit Row's next enhancement, and I can't complain with that. And I really feel that sorry, I was reading your message.
No worries.
And Swerve just looked, I mean, you know, broken record here, but Swerve just looked fantastic. So
no, he's absolutely the guy in charge of what's going on, and he's treating it like I got to direct all these guys on what they should do. Swerve is on right now. Absolutely.
He's on fire.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the kind of thing where I'm absolutely an advocate of leaving acts off of TV from time to time. I was just saying about Cameron Grimes earlier. But I'm not going to complain about getting a little bit of Hit Row on a show that they weren't heavily featured on, because they're pretty much the best thing on the show right now. I liked Xia Li and Mercedes Martinez acknowledging their match from 4 years ago. I like bringing up that history, and it's going to create a neat touch point. Like, it would be fun to actually go back and rewatch that match. It is a quickie. And then compare it to this match, because Xia Li's her journey so far, if not rewarding, it's at least been one of my favorite things to watch consistently. So this will be a good proving ground for her. Mercedes' response specifically wasn't great, but you know, it you want her to respond in this situation. And and the other thing is Frankie Monet's thing, which honestly I was out of the room. I noticed the show had come back on. I zipped back in, and it was already over. So I missed it. My note says I missed this, and my first thought was, what did I miss about it? What happened here that I missed on NXT? Oh wait, no, I just missed this. Okay.
You didn't miss a whole lot. It was basically just her reading a bunch of like one-line reviews from her match last week and talking about how great she is.
All right.
That's about it. Didn't miss a whole lot. And Cam, if you missed it, I did put all those in the chat, in the Skype chat, to make life easy.
No, I'm right there with all of that. Like,
sweet.
No, I thought the things that happened on the side. Hurt Row is this weird thing where I don't care about their music at all. Like, don't make any songs, right? But I think that Swerve is a unique talent where we knew how good he was on the Indies, right? There was never any question about that, but somebody like that, you got to prop them up with other things. I think that, and this is a weird comparison because they're not the same thing, but we all knew Triple H could wrestle. Like, there was never a question, right? When did Triple H really hit his stride? It was when he met Mick Foley. That was the thing. We were like, okay, this guy is that good. This guy's turned that corner, right? I think for Swerve, at least on a national stage, it was Leon Ruff. It was like, oh, this is the guy to beat on. Like, this is the guy I can make feel a way about my physicality and what I can do to him. So he gets through Leon Ruff, and he has a faction all of a sudden, and confidence, right? And so Swerve is just taking off now. So he has a Shanti. He has the powerhouse behind him. He has the pretty manager behind him. And he's great. He runs Motor Drake Maverick. He's like, yo, you're nobody, and I'm going to tell you about being nobody. And they're great. They are great. I don't know if that'll be like a faction that wins all the titles, but they are fantastic right now. So, no, all the backstage stuff, I appreciate right now.
I agree. Everything with Hit Row, I mean, I was glad to see them a little bit tonight because, you know, we didn't get them really at all otherwise. But yeah, they're one of my favorite things on NXT right now. I agree. I don't know if they're necessarily a faction that's going to, like, you know, win all the titles, or, you know, if there'll be a faction we're talking about like DX or NWO, you know, like 20 years from now. But for what it is right now, I think this is great. I think this is an awesome spot for Swerve. I really like what you brought up about Leon Ruff, and kind of him being the opponent that really set Swerve on fire here in NXT, because I agree 100%. And this is something that I was saying, you know, during that feud, because like at first when Swerve started turning heel, he was losing all the time. He kept losing matches. He lost a couple to Leon Ruff. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, something's going on here. They've got bigger plans for him right now, because he's like, Shane Strickland is just too good to be losing and you know, being treated like this. And it felt like they had something for him. And now through that whole feud with Leon Ruff, I feel like he really came into his own. He really figured out who the Swerve character is. And now with the addition of Hit Row, it's like, yeah, I feel like the sky's the limit for him. I don't know if we'll necessarily see him. Well, I say sky's the limit. I don't know if we'll necessarily see him like hit the main event or anything like that. But in terms of this faction, I think I think this is really going to be a solid launching point for him. So definitely agree there. Let's so we'll go over to emails here. We're gonna start. With an email from Steve Repsher. Greetings, gentlemen. Hope all is well. I write before tonight's episode, since my comments and questions are more general in nature. First, with tonight's number one contender triple threat, the same vibe from each potential winner. Stale. With the specific matchup versus Cross, it might be a new thing. We've seen Gargano, Dunn, and O'Reilly cycled and recycled through the title picture. I also see, if not them, who side of things. With what about – and then – actually, I'm going to – I'll stop there. He followed up with another email after that saying that, edit, here's the risk of emailing before the show. I guess it's not stale anymore. I now found myself wishing WWE would break its character and make this an elimination match. So he kind of, you know, his first question got answered throughout the course of the show. Then he says, what about taking Escobar out of the North American title picture and shoot him straight to the NXT title program? You then have Swerve to be the next major challenger for the North American title. I think I might be coming up with an August takeover card here. Second, how and when does NXT follow the Raw and SmackDown lead and take the first step back to normal? I doubt the CWC can take on many more fans. Is it as simple as going back to Full Sail or somewhat larger crowd? Maybe you start by reviving the Coconut Loop. What about big arena takeovers? SummerSlam weekend sounds like a reasonable target date, no? Unless SummerSlam itself is on Saturday night, like some reports are saying. That's more than enough. Take care and good night. So I guess I'll start with Escobar coming out of the North American title picture and throwing Swerve in there. 100% on board with that. I think you could easily take Escobar and throw him into the main event spot. I don't think I would see the title on him. I don't think I'd be opposed to it, but I don't think I see it happening. But I could certainly get on board with them moving him up to the main event to make a spot for Swerve in the North American title scene. Absolutely on board with that. And then as far as moving NXT back to normal, back to Full Sail, things like that, Tom might have a better idea where he lives in the area and has a little bit more, knowledge of Full Sail and all of that. I have absolutely no idea what the plan is for NXT anyway. I haven't heard anything. I know, obviously, with they've announced some Raw and SmackDowns coming up, July, I forget the exact dates, that are coming up, with the return of live crowds. I think it really kind of just depends on, how the rest of the world is going here. Florida is probably one of the most lax states on COVID rules and things like that. So reviving the Coconut Loop, I could see that happening. Tom, why don't we see what you got to say about all that, since you are the Full Sail guy after all.
Yeah, no secret that it's super lax here. I'm the guy still walking around, well, on the few occasions that I can be found walking around with a mask on and gloves. And, people just look at me like I'm a freaking weirdo who's drinking all the Kool-Aid. So that's what it's like down here.
Come up to New England where it's the other way around.
Yeah. I wish I had a better answer for you in terms of like what I know or what my sense for it is. I do have a friend who works for Full Sail, and I believe he's still working from home, although knowing what he does for the school, it's something that can be very easily adapted to be done remotely, especially after I think they gave him like a special laptop or they like installed a bunch of software on his computer. Something that made him, that gave him all the stuff that he needed. So I'm pretty sure he's still working from home. But they've been having students back on campus for almost a year now. Maybe only for certain things, but I wouldn't know. So I think it comes down to, in the Performance Center, WWE is able to control what they do. And at Full Sail, Full Sail has to control that side of things, and they just don't want to deal with that right now. I was saying before any of this started, NXT has to get their asses on the road. They've got to get the hell out of Orlando. But now I have trouble seeing them selling a decent looking house on the road now, based on, you know, versus where I saw them a little over a year ago. So I guess it's just stay where you're at until you can start doing shows out of Full Sail again, because I don't believe that relationship has crumbled, even though it's one that I've advocated for abandoning multiple times for WWE's sake, because I really don't feel like they get much out of it, even though Triple H would tell us otherwise, and he has over and over again. But, yeah, I guess I just don't I wish I had a better answer for you. It's just I don't see them. If going on the road were an option before, I don't, which, again, according to Triple H, it was something that they weren't considering. But I don't see it as an option now. I don't see those tickets moving. Escobar, I've been, yeah, I absolutely, I've said it before, I absolutely see him at the top level, I think. It's just, I'm trying to decide what word to use. Is it crowded? Because you're right, it is. It's also stale. Which is why I was thinking the exact same thing regarding adding an elimination stipulation to this match, possibly. But yeah, it just, you mentioned Swerve in the same paragraph, Escobar and Swerve, and we've said it, you know, the past several weeks, that they feel very much in the same position right now, where it's like we view them as top guys. We view them with top guy potential. But, you know, their ceiling is at the North American level right now just because of the way the roster shakes out. And I love at least that they did have Swerve in his most recent in-ring promo mentioned the top title as you know, in his sights. So there's that.
All right. And Cam on that email. Cam, I think you might be muted. Tom, are you there?
Oh yeah. You got.
Yeah, Cam, I see. So Cam's got his webcam on. I see Cam talking, but I can't hear Cam. Well, Cam, I'm going to send you a message on Skype, and I hope you get it. All right. Well, I guess in the meantime, while Cam works on his audio issues.
That did not sound like a real keyboard. That sounded like you played a keyboard sound effect.
Oh, no, totally a keyboard. I won't use anything that's not mechanical, unless it's my Apple keyboard, because they don't make one that's not mechanical. Yeah, all right. Well, hopefully Cam makes it back to the show. I don't know who he's talking to, but he's talking. Anyway, so let's move on to another email here. We'll go to we already went to JB. Let's go to Brian Alston. Brian Alston says, "Hello, friends. I have a movie question. Just kidding. That's for the exclusive VIP PW Torch podcast. NXT 8 years back comes out every Saturday. If only I could remember the names of the hosts. Regarding last week's edition of PWT Talks NXT, I have three issues. Nate naming his dog Corbin. Nate says his dog was already named Corbin when he adopted him. I did some investigating, and Corbin's original name was Fido." Tell the truth, Nate, you're a closeted King Corbin fan. No, I will admit I'm not a closeted King Corbin fan. Like I said on Wade's show the other day, Corbin was he was a rescue where all of the dogs in the litter were named with K's. So Corbin, it was Corbin, Kara, Keaton, and a whole bunch of other dogs. And I liked Corbin because of Corbin Dallas from Fifth Element. That's always been a good name. Anyway, two, Kelly's cat, Corporal Fuzzington, throwing up. I feel bad for Corporal because I throw up during every PWT Ducks NXT episode. Thanks, Brian.
Great.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Ahead of time, that's great.
I didn't either. I didn't because he sent it in. he sent it in just 20 minutes ago. So that's awesome. Tom, your furry family members are off the hook for now.
I just haven't talked about them on the air. No, they're perpetually in trouble. My scaly family members are off the hook.
And on the exclusive VIP edition of the East Coast cast, Travis Bryant's cat, Kemet, talks loudly at least one time per episode, and I'm in love with Frankie Monet. Thanks, Brian Alston. Cam, do we have you back? Okay, I guess not.
I will just say, Brian, don't you dare tease me with movie questions. Now I want a movie question, damn it. But we will be talking about the Matrix movies. We've been mentioning them here and there on the podcast recently on 8 years back on VIP, but we will be talking about the Matrix movies more at length on this upcoming episode as you know, part of the movie segment. And then 2 weeks from now, we will be talking about Sigourney Weaver films.
Ooh, all right. Sigourney Weaver films. Excellent. Well, I think that brings us to the end of the show here tonight. I don't know what happened to Cam, but I think I'm still here, and I think Tom's still here, so we can at least say goodbye to you guys. This has been another episode of PWT Talks NXT for June 2nd, 2021. I am Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I got to actually either write myself later on this week or see if Kelly will do it for me.
Hey, goddammit, can you hear me now?
Hey, you're back. Yes. How about that? All right.
Yo, I went through so many – okay, so listen, guys. I love everybody in the chat and everybody in, like, the show. A very good-looking woman was like, yo, I couldn't hear you. And I was like, yo, I got to fix this. So I've been hitting all the buttons on every device that I own.
That's all right,
Brian,
man.
Brian Alston, I love you. You're my favorite person in Arizona. Forget all those guys from the Steel Cage podcast. I hate all of them. You're the best. Guys, thank you for having me on. I really do appreciate it.
Hey, not a problem, man. I'm glad to have you on here tonight, man. Good time.
It was love, man. We should have done this way sooner. I know I kind of faded you by a week, and I'm so sorry, but this was great. I love it. Doing this live is a different level of excitement and different level of just like remembering what happened. It's great. I do appreciate it. This is the best live cam I've ever been on. Your cat's going crazy. You have – I'm looking at, like, your right-hand shoulder. That's where I put my shoes. So I'm like, yeah, my sneakers go in there. It's great. this is the best. So anytime you want to do this, let me know.
Sounds good, man.
Yeah, man. But thank you guys so much.
Hey, Cam, thank you very much, dude. Thank you very much. Tom, who are you?
At Tom Stoup on Twitter. And likewise, like I said at the top, we've been trying to get Cam on for a long time. So – I really appreciate you doing it. One look at you, and I can't disguise that I feel the magic between you and I.
Oh. Tom, I hate you so much. You're the worst. I'm going to block you tomorrow and report you. but no, you're amazing. I just want to tell really quick, Amanda Santiago, you are gorgeous, and thank you for listening. And I'm going to send Tom and Nate your video so they can see why I was so focused on getting back on this show. Everybody will love it. It's fantastic.
All right. Well, hey, I'm looking forward to that. And with that note, as Kelly and I ended the show the other day for Wade, for Corbin, arf, arf. Take care.